ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into Market Talk. Thanks for joining us here today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. We got a busy show lined up for you here today on the program. We're going to talk with Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge in just a moment. He's joining us for the first half of the show. Then coming up in the second half of the show, Joe Lardy, research analyst with CHS, is going to join us here on the program. First time we've had Joe on Market Talk. Looking forward to that conversation coming up later on in the program as well. Plenty of things to watch in these markets. Geopolitical issues with Israel attacking Iran overnight with one missile strike. We saw the E15 summertime waiver announcement from EPA on Friday. Plenty to talk about. Let's kick things off. Joining us now, Ted Seifert with Zahner Ag Hedge. Ted, how are you, buddy? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well, Jesse. Thanks for having me. Always good to talk with you too, man.
Well, Ted, let's start markets on Friday. Pretty decent day overall in the grains with all the different news headlines and more to kind of wrap up the week. Your thoughts on kind of an okay day on Friday?
Hey, you know, I mean, for soybeans, you had an outside reversal higher day. You know, you made a new recent low, since the contract low back at the end of February, and then, you know, ended up trading above Thursday's high. So from a technical perspective, that's a pretty good sign. But, you know, we kind of got to ask yourself why, right? Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, we had export sales, but we had some flash sales, right?
Yeah.
But those were mostly new crop, and we are so far behind on our new crop sales that, if anything, that's just a sigh of relief. I don't think that's anything to get terribly excited about. You know, what was with the strength there? And it occurs to me, Jesse, that the last couple of weekends, at least, we have had, less of an appetite to go home with big positions than we have, you know, previously. And that's all due to global uncertainty, global conflicts, you know, Middle East issues, and, you know, so on and so forth, right? I mean, however many years I've been doing this, I lost count now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've had to be an amateur meteorologist for the entire time, which is fine. And I actually kind of enjoy weather. But, you know, how many other things do we have to do as grain analysts here, Jesse? Like, global trade specialists, the trade
political
war,
analyst. Political,
yeah.
You know.
Now global conflict expert, right? pandemic, you know, whatever. Here's the thing. I don't think any of us really know what's going to happen. On Thursday, we had the feeling that Israel was going to just maybe wait on anything with Iran and just kind of focus on the task at hand. But then, you know, Thursday night into Friday morning, there's, you know, missiles being lobbed into Iran and Syria as well, and Iraq. And okay. So again, you look at markets and you say, okay, there's a bit less of a risk appetite in this sort of climate. And then you have to look at these individual markets and say, okay, where is the risk? You know, I think traditionally when we talk about risk off, we think that means selling. Because traditionally when we talk about speculators, you know, they're a lot of times long, right? They like to buy. And so when we say risk off, that means they're getting out of short positions. Well, and in the case of the cattle complex, yeah, okay, that's, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the case. But in the case of the grains, you know, the risk for them is the big short positions they have. So risk off means short covering, which means higher trade. And we saw that last Friday. We saw it this Friday. The thing is that we gave that all back on Monday morning last time around. Are we going to do that again this time? You know, I don't know. I would suspect probably yes. Which means that, you know, for all the good that we did on a chart there Friday, like I said, outside reversal higher day in soybeans and then corn, while on Thursday it broke below 440 July, which was a major line in the sand that it really kind of needed to hold. It got a reprieve on Friday and went right back up to its 50-day moving average, which we've been tussling with for 2 months now, Jesse. So, you know, I don't know. But if we give it all back on Monday, does that wipe any positive chart activity off? You know, I don't know. But what I will say is this: uncertainty is probably the best thing that we have for these markets right now. Mm-hmm. Risk off is probably the best thing that we have for these markets right now, because when you look at the bigger picture, global conflict is not a bullish thing for agricultural commodities, in my opinion. Global conflict and you know, the tie-ins with Middle East and China, and these are things that could really muddy the global trade picture. And war is not like it used to be, Jesse. You know, this isn't World War II where we have to feed, 19 and 20 year old men going into battle and things like that. I mean, war nowadays is done with drones and, you know, ballistic missiles, things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, there is a demand for some commodities, i.e. metals and also energies, and also energies because of where this is happening. But we don't have to feed armies. So it's not a situation where we're going to have this huge new demand for agriculture, at least not in my opinion. So once the risk off dust settles, I think the risk on portion of this, the realization that none of this is really bullish for agricultural commodities, that's the scarier thing, you know? But if there's an opportunity, like if there is this bigger, broader, short covering event that happens, I think that's going to be an opportunity for the producer, for the American farmer to really, I'd say, get aggressively sold. And it's a big if. I'm not sure that happens. I'm not sure this massive short covering rally happens. But if it does, man, I really feel like we need to take advantage of that. And again, I mean, you're going to hear a lot of analysts say that, you know, war is super inflationary and everything like that. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I have a different view on that. And really, not to go off on a terrible tangent here, but I have a different view, I think, on inflation than I think others do. Inflationary goes in stages. Inflation goes in stages. And what I mean by that is that the beginning stages of inflation happen at a raw commodity level. Now, go back to 2019, 2020, when we're dumping a ton of stimulus into the market. We know there's a lot of purchasing power coming. Companies know that, so they're ramping up. And that means global demand for really everything, raw commodities, really ramps up. And that's exactly what we saw. Now, the second stage of inflation is where that gets passed on to the consumer, i.e. in the form of products, car values going crazy. The box of cereal at the grocery store that was $2.99 is $8.99, things like that. That happens. So that's the second stage of inflation. And then the third stage of inflation is your service industry, your labor market, because now people have to pay for these higher priced products. And Jesse, I'm here to tell you, we are in the third stage, or the tertiary final stage of inflation. Inflation is sticky. It doesn't go away, but you have to understand how it evolves over time, and you have to understand what that means for the different things that are affected by inflation. And while I will not disagree that inflation is here and still here and possibly getting worse, I don't feel like this is something that is extremely bullish for raw commodities and agricultural commodities in particular. I really do believe that inflation and the past levels of inflation that we've seen is already baked into these markets. In fact, I'm going to say commodity markets, raw commodity markets, are a direct reflection of that first level of inflation. So if anything, it's looking into the past more than into the future. I'm going to say I don't feel like that is a major tailwind for raw commodities. And so I don't like that argument. I hear a lot of people talking about it. You know, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not seeing that as a good reason for grains in particular to go sharply higher going forward.
Ted, let's talk about, I know there's been some chatter in the markets too here in the last couple of weeks in terms of NASS getting rid of some of these reports. I know as well, there's also been talk about the big discrepancy between USDA's numbers and CONAB's numbers in South America. And you were mentioning this to me while we were off air that you've gotten some clarity on this here this past week. So talk to me about this. I mean, what have you heard? What have you found out? And maybe start with the NASS numbers first real quick.
Yeah. So I attended the USDA data users meeting in Chicago, which was on Tuesday. I'm super happy we're back to doing this. It's really nice. It's fun to be in an auditorium room. It's done at the University of Chicago Glacier. anyways, it's great to be in a room and be able to ask these guys questions, right? They first go over policy changes, which there are some, right? I mean, like you said, getting rid of county level yields and also getting rid of that July cattle report. So they explain that. And then, you know, they open it up to questions for about 2 hours. And so we sit there and just grill the USDA on stuff. It's a lot of fun, actually. right. but getting rid of the county level yields, a lot of people have a big, big problem with that. Right. My concern with that was, does that dilute the end number that we have at state and national levels? And the answer to that is no, because they're done in different ways. County level yields are surveys, and they're only surveys, whereas state and national are done from actual, like, they're done more on the commercial side, so from elevator receipts, things like that, right? So, no, it doesn't weaken the numbers that we get for state and national numbers. So for me, that was the important concern. But I do understand that for a lot of, local, like at grain elevators, they want to know what these, you know, county level yields are. I get that. Mm-hmm. But there's a different way of doing that, and it's RMA data, crop insurance data. It doesn't come when we want it to, and it's a different data set that we've not been using. So there's a transition that has to be made. But honestly, I think that we're going to be better off in the long run because I think it's more accurate data. So I don't know. For me, it's an annoyance, I think, for a lot of people, and it's something that will take some time to transition to and with. And they haven't said for sure whether that might come back for 2025, but we know it's going to be gone for 2024. It's due to budget cuts. I got different numbers from them, from different people in the USDA, as far how much it costs to get those county level surveys. Some said 6 million, some said 10 million. Either way, mm-hmm. it's an amount of money that they feel is given their tight budget, is given the lack of a farm bill, by the way. They feel like that money is better used elsewhere. So, okay, it is what it is, right? I mean, we can argue about it if we want to, but there's nothing there. It's not going to happen. That's the answer that we got. So, okay. But the bigger one was, the big show for me on Tuesday was, okay, we have this huge discrepancy between Conabi numbers and the USDA's South American forecast, specifically Brazil, corn, really. But everybody talks about beans. And why? What is going on here? There's always been a difference between USDA and Conabi, but it's never been this wide of a margin. What is happening? And I think the best answer that we got from that is that, one, the USDA comes up with their number using a variety of different things. But, you know, really, the ABOVE, or the Brazilian crush, it's like their NOPA, their crush demand versus their export census. When you put those demand numbers together, there's no way the Conabi number, production number, can be accurate. And this has been going on for years, and the USDA has had to go back and revise these numbers higher, because there's no way that they're crushing and exporting more beans than they're producing. Negative carryovers, things like that. It just can't be. And then so when I ask the question, should they have started with a higher number for Brazil, higher than the 163 where they started the Brazilian crop? They said, yes, we absolutely should have. And that is the realization that we've come to over the course of the last few months. While we've had to raise previous years, you know, if last year was the 166, there was no way we should have been starting with a 163 this year. I asked, well, can you share the number that you should have started with? And they say, no, we can't tell you what that is. I said, my number was a 171 as opposed to your 163. What do you think about that? And they smiled and nodded and, yeah, tight lips. But yeah, sure. So the fact of the matter, Jesse, is I don't think we should look at the USDA's 155 million metric ton Brazilian production number as they're just being stubborn and they won't lower it more than 8 million metric tons, because honestly, that's not the case. Their starting point in their minds has gone up pretty significantly, I think. So really, instead of being an 8 million metric ton reduction, you got to look at it more like a 15 or 16 million metric ton reduction, which is about a 10% reduction, which is a lot more indicative of the weather that they had in Mato Grosso and the issues that they had there. So if you look at it in that light, it makes a whole lot more sense, and it makes that 155 a lot more palatable. Now, I don't think a lot of producers, farmers, and some analysts want to hear that. But I think that's the reality of the situation, and that probably, I'm going to say, I don't think that 155 is coming down, or at least not by much. So, you know, there's that. I also ask, you know, why are the Canavi numbers, you know, different, and why is this difference becoming bigger? They don't really know, but I have a bit of a hunch on that. Canavi is the USDA, or it's the Brazilian USDA. USDA is underfunded. Imagine how underfunded Canavi is. Their budget is just a fraction, right? And they're pretty good about polling the traditional areas in Brazil. But there's a whole other area in Brazil that, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they tried up in the north to really proliferate that area, because they knew that that northern arc, that port system, the biggest deep water grain terminals system in the world, was coming online, and that they wanted to have production as close to that as possible. It was a great idea. But then they had 2 years of really bad weather, yields were terrible, and they kind of shied away or moved away from that northern acreage. And I think the rest of the world just kind of wrote that off as a failed experiment. But I don't think it was. I think they're back, and they are really, really, really doing well. I mean, the weather pattern in the last couple of years has really given them a lot of really good crops up in the north that they are planting. And I don't think Canavi has the infrastructure in place to really pull for or account for a lot of that. They're just kind of guessing at it. And I think that's really where the difference comes from. And I think the USDA's now figured that out, and I think has a better idea on it. So for my 2 cents, that's what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But really, it all kind of adds up to me saying, I don't think you're going to have this day of reckoning that a lot of analysts are touting, saying that, you know, that 155, we're just going to lose 15 million metric tons of Brazilian production one of these days. And that's going to get translated into a whole lot more U.S. exports, and our balance sheet's going to be a lot tighter, not just for this current marketing year, potentially for next marketing year as well. I just don't see it. And the proof, Jesse, is in the pudding. I know I've been saying this for 6 months now. If this were really the case, if the Brazilian crop was really a 140, you would see China coming in buying new crop soybeans hand over fist. Mm-hmm. And it's gone the opposite. Really, our new crop export, our new crop bean export sales on the books that we have right now is the lowest that we've had since, man, mid or late 2000s, right? I mean, it's 15 years. It's bad. Yeah. It's really not good. If China, who they've got more people on the ground in Brazil than we do, and probably more people looking at grains in Brazil than Brazil does, for that matter, if they knew that the problem was really that bad, they would be buying from us like crazy, and we would see that, and that would be the proof, and we would be able to say, okay, these stories are true. But without that, Jesse, I think you have to just kind of say, Canavi is behind the times. The USDA has caught up and figured it out. I think you got to roll with the USDA number from here on out.
So I think to sum all of that up, as we look at these markets, really, you just, for the U.S. farmer, you got to be a smart risk manager here. We talk about this all the time, but with everything out there, and to the points you just mentioned, you got to protect your risk for your operation at this point, don't you, Ted?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, you can listen to all the bullish rhetoric you want, but I think when you're talking about issues in other growing areas, and you're talking about global trade and things like that, just keep watching export sales. And until they tell you not to be bearish, I think you got to stay being bearish. And yes, protect your bottom line, protect the downside. It's more important than ever. You know, land values are super high. Rents are super high. Interest rates are super high. Input costs are super high. These are the most expensive crops we've ever been planting, Jesse. We do not have room to the downside. We have zero tolerance for much lower prices. And by all indications of how the market's trading, what the charts look like, what these export sales are telling us, we could be a long ways from the bottom. So you really do have to protect that and make sure that you can, you know, insulate whatever profit margins you have, right? Or at least draw a line in the sand using like put options or something like that to make sure that you're not very deeply in the red. Because if you are, oh boy, this could be a really big problem with the banks going forward. And unfortunately, I get the feeling that the market's gunning for that, looking for that. Markets always have a mission. And in this case, I feel like they are trying to really put a lot of pressure on the American producer. to maybe see less production. I don't know. That's not worked in the past, and that's a whole other story. I know we've already gone on for quite a while, so we can save that for another time. But I don't know. It really doesn't feel like any sort of bullish news is really being effective for these markets, and that's a bad sign. And again, I'll take it back down to that export sales number. That for me right now is my main indicator of, hey, if the biggest end users in the world, these are very savvy people, if they are worried about prices going higher, they will start buying aggressively. And until that happens, you have to say the smartest buyers in the world are very bearish, and you should probably go with them.
Ted, good stuff as always, buddy. And if real quick, if folks have questions, they want to talk to you about their marketing plan and managing their risk and more, I know they can reach you there at Zahner Ag Hedge very easily. How can they get a hold of you?
Sure. Call me directly, 312-277-0113. You can also find us on the web at www.zahner.com. You can read a bit about us. You can sign up for our afternoon commentary that I do for, I said I was going to do 5 minutes, but it's been stretching from 7 to 10 minutes. I guess I like to ramble, Jesse. Sorry about that. But you can sign up for that, and it gives you access to listen to that. I do it pretty much daily. I didn't do it Tuesday because I was at the data users meeting. Things like that. Or, last Friday I was at Market to Market, but I try to do it every day. So feel free to sign up for that. Aside from that, you can find me on the Twitters or the X or whatever, X Twitter, whatever we're calling it. But I am at the Ted Spread.
Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge. Always a pleasure, buddy. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again real soon.
You too, man. Thanks for having me. Have fun with your weekend, and hopefully you get out and get some golfing done.
I'm going to try. I'm no Tiger Woods by any means, but hey, we'll go hit the little white ball around if we can, for sure. Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge, joining us here on Market Talk. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Joe Lardy with CHS. He'll join us after the break here on Market Talk.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Well, joining us now here on Market Talk as we continue to recap the market trade action that we saw here this past week and on Friday. Pretty solid day overall, again, in the grains and in the livestock trade too. But really, plenty of things to talk about in these markets, of course, with the geopolitical concerns and much more. We're going to talk demand and things like that. Joining us for a conversation, first time we've had him on Market Talk, Joe Lardy, research analyst with CHS, is joining us. And Joe, thanks for the time and joining us here on Market Talk. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I always appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and the listeners. Yeah.
We've talked a few times before on AOA and around the table and programs like that, but happy to bring you into the Market Talk environment here for a bit of an extended market conversation. And Joe, let's start with some of the headlines that I think were out there in the trade, especially on Friday. The escalation of tensions in the Middle East, Israel, Iran. It seems like as we went through the market day, Iran kind of downplayed things. Feels like that the tensions maybe simmered a bit heading into the weekend. But your thoughts just real quick on some of this geopolitical risk and how it's been playing itself into the markets, if you've really seen a big market impact here as of late.
Well, I think the thing we have to consider is in this environment that we're in with this geopolitical tensions, the markets are going to react when things happen. And we definitely saw that across the majority commodity markets. I mean, looking at the crude oil market, some huge ranges just as this story develops. And, initially these markets are going to give us that headline reaction. And then, like you said, that, you know, things kind of seemed to simmer down a little bit, and then the markets kind of fell back into line. But I think it just underscores the volatility that these markets are susceptible to anytime we have these type of tensions and actions and conflicts. And, you know, now that we've spread beyond Russia and Ukraine, now we're into Israel, Iran, I think that's just opening up more uncertainty, more geopolitical risk, and, you know, more opportunities for these markets to get bounced around by some headlines.
Yeah, the headline risk in these markets, you know, whether we're talking the geopolitical issues or other, you know, outside headlines, to your point, Joe, the headline risk is what has really driven the volatility in many of these markets for, I'll say, the past couple of years, Joe.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, it's one of those things that depending on the event that happens, it could turn these markets on their head, you know, very quickly. I mean, just look at the price appreciation when the Russia-Ukraine conflict started and how, you know, wheat went so high, but then it, you know, course corrected after a period of time. So these markets are definitely ripe to big price swings. And, you know, unfortunately, it makes us stay on our toes a lot more with any exposures that we have in these markets, because it could change, like we saw, it can change overnight.
Yeah, it can definitely change overnight. Another news headline that came out Friday morning, the Biden administration and the EPA did announce that summertime E15 emergency waiver to allow the sales of E15. That was rumored on social media Thursday and then happened on Friday. Do you see a big market impact at all with that news, or is it largely, okay, this was expected, and it's not necessarily a big driver here in the markets? What are your thoughts there?
I think it's just an underlying supportive thing for the corn market. It's not one of those things where the EPA makes the announcement and we need to put 50 cents into corn tomorrow. You know, it's not one of those really big market moving things, but it does underline one of the really supportive things for the corn market, all things considered. You know, the ethanol demand has been pretty consistent, pretty stable, and we've seen the USDA make some upward revisions to the ethanol line on the balance sheet because demand has been pretty good. So keeping the E15 going year-round now is certainly going to continue to just be one of those, frankly, very nice supportive demand things, because in the corn market there hasn't been a ton of those events out there, you know. So getting this is certainly a good shot in the arm.
I would agree. And well, let's stay on that demand theme a little bit here. And you do a lot of work looking at demand as a research analyst with CHS. Let's talk, you know, more specifically the grains here on that demand picture. We got some flash sales Friday morning, corn and beans, largely new crop, but still some flash sales. That was nice. Overall, though, what's this demand picture for U.S. grains in your opinion? Are we seeing any signs of life? What are we looking at right now, Joe?
Unfortunately, we're just kind of going through the motions. We're kind of on seasonal trends, and you know, definitely on the soybean side, our peak weeks of new sales are behind us. And frankly, with the size of the crop that's growing down in South America this year, it hasn't really given the U.S. really big opportunities on the bean side. And on the corn side, not having China be there this year, like they had been in previous years, that really was a great demand input that we're just not seeing this year. And I think a lot of that has been displaced when China and Brazil created a new trade agreement to import Brazilian corn. I think a lot of U.S. corn, unfortunately, was displaced by that agreement. So the corn side is okay, but it's, you know, there's nothing exciting, extraordinary happening that's probably going to pull us out of this weaker price environment that we're kind of been stuck in for a while here.
Yeah. And I wonder too, with this weaker price environment, I mean, out of the main grains, corn, beans, wheat, what charts are most concerning to you right now, Joe? Earlier in the week, I would have probably guessed soybeans. Maybe that's still the case, but, you know, soybeans had a good day on Friday. So I guess as you look at the charts, and I know we're getting ready to roll from May to July contracts and many of these commodities as well. I mean, just chart-wise, what's most concerning to you right now?
I think both the corn and the bean charts are most concerning. I mean, when you draw trend lines, it's a decidedly downward pointing trend line. And we run into this pattern where we see this big pop up and then we can't sustain it. And then we continue to trend lower. And then it pops up a little bit and then we continue to trend lower. And, you know, we hit, you know, multi-week lows. And so the market kind of looks at it, is this our opportunity to rally? So I'm going to be really focused on the charts next week to see, can we sustain a little bit of this rally? And can we maybe force some of these funds to cover their short positions, which are, you know, near record short positions? And if the market really wants to see the charts turn around, we're going to need cooperation from the funds actually covering up some of these big, big, big short positions.
Well, and we've seen some of this happen too. You know, in the last couple of times we've rolled from one front month to a new front month too. Some basis problems and squeezes for farmers have happened, things like that. So with that coming up too in mind here, and you mentioned watching some of the funds, I mean, do you foresee cash basis doing the heavy lifting into the summer? Could we still see a futures-led type of rally in these grain markets potentially? What do you think, Joe?
I think there's going to be a combo platter. I think in the short term, in order to get grain to move, we've started to see it already in the last couple of days where we've started to see some basis pushes. But I don't think basis alone will be the big catalyst to change prices significantly. I think that's going to come in kind of a two-pronged attack. Number one, Mother Nature is going to have to throw us some type of curveball to institute kind of the seasonal trend that we see, you know, around the uncertainty with weather, the growing conditions. Typically, when you look back, our best price action tends to fall in that June, early July period when there's the most weather concern. However, if the weather is great this year and we get everything planted like we think, you know, we're going to have some pretty big carryouts both in the corn and the bean market. And that'll just reassure the funds that their short positions were the right thing to do. And, you know, we could be seeing softer prices. If Mother Nature gives us that curveball and we have some growing condition issues, we start to all of a sudden shrink the balance sheets, especially on the corn side, and the funds want to cover, there's where the magic catalyst happens. And that's where I think we could see some good price rallies, frankly, come kind of midsummer here.
Yeah, that's a great point to kind of wrap up our discussion here today. You know, you mentioned it. I mean, largely outside of any headline risks that we might see that we talked about earlier, this is that time where these markets largely become a combination of end of South America's growing season weather markets, Safrinha weather market, and U.S. weather market. That's largely, this is that seasonal time of year for that, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're clearly more focused on our own weather around here. We understand it. It's so much more visible than the South American situation. And, you know, this is the period where things generally get dynamic and we start to see some, you know, some prices move around a little bit. And frankly, going into this year, both corn and bean volatility right now are frankly very, very low, almost historically low on the bean side of things. So, you know, if we do get some weather, it could really shake our markets up.
A lot of things for farmers to keep an eye on and watch for, no doubt. And of course, that risk of trading futures and options can be substantial. So make sure you remember that as you are working on your marketing plans and more. Joe Lardy, research analyst with CHS. Joe, it's been a great discussion. Thank you for joining us. And we'll have to get you back on the program again real soon. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. I'd love to come back anytime.
Well, we will definitely make that happen. Once again, Joe Lardy, research analyst with CHS, joining us here on Market Talk. Great to bring him into the Market Talk family. And of course, again, reminder, the risk of trading futures and options can be substantial. So make sure you think about that as you are looking at your marketing plans. All right, we got a cattle on feed report hot off the press. We're going to take a look at that and wrap things up on the way here on Market Talk right after the break.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Busy show today, as I indicated. We got right to it with Ted Seifert earlier in the show from Zahner Ag Hedge. Really appreciate Ted being on, and some really good insight there from that data meeting that he went to with the USDA in Chicago here this past week. Looking at those differences between USDA and CONAB, and then also those NAS reports and more. So interesting insight there earlier in the show from Ted. And then great to have Joe Lardy from CHS join us here on the show as well, as Joe kind of talked about. I've talked with Joe before in different platforms, different avenues, but great to have him here with us on Market Talk and get some thoughts overall on the trade and some good demand thoughts there from Joe Lardy. So we've wrapped up our analysis portion for the most part here of the show. I have a little bit of analysis for you. Mainly, let's look at the cattle on feed report. That fresh off the press after the close of trade on Friday. And guess what? I think we got a bullish report. Watching the placements number specifically, but April 1st cattle on feed up 1% from a year ago. That inventory 11.8 million head, and that came in pretty much in line with the pre-report expectations. It was just below the average estimate of 102 for this report, so that was pretty much in line. Placements number 1.75 million head, 12% below 2023. That was well off the average estimate of 92.8%. It was below the pre-report range of expectations, 88%, the actual number there from USDA. So I have to think that is bullish. Marketings of fed cattle during March totaled 1.71 million head, 14% below the 2023 number, came in at 86%. The average estimate was 89%. It was at the low end of pre-report expectations. So both those numbers, I have to think they're bullish for this cattle market. So maybe some good news finally for the cattle trade. Other disappearance totaled 57,000 head during March. That was 8% above 2023. So I think some good numbers overall there for the cattle on feed report out on Friday after the close. We'll see what the reaction is in this cattle market as we get into next week. I know cash has still been running pretty good. Cash trade on Friday was starting to pick up, but it was about $2 to $3 lower than the asking prices, but still getting some cattle moved to end the week on Friday. Boxed beef was mixed to mostly higher, especially select was up almost $2 in the midday report on Friday. So some good things for this cattle market. We'll see how trade goes into this upcoming week. Hogs, triple-digit gains there, as the market bouncing off of some of the technical support that we saw on Thursday, volatility continuing to remain as we saw pork cutout values up over a dollar on the midday report on Friday as well, right above that $101 mark. So support, I think, from pork cutout values and carcass prices being supported by subtle gains across all cuts on Friday. So some good fundamentals in that hog market as well. On the grains, again, had a good day Friday for the most part across the board. Weekly closes were not great, but not bad. July corn closed down 4 1/4 cents on the week. December corn was down 5 3/4 cents for the week. July beans were down 21 cents, with November beans down 15 1/4 cents on the week. July Kansas City wheat closed down 4 cents. July Chicago wheat was down 4 cents. And July Minneapolis wheat, that was up 2.5 cents for the week. So not the best weekly closes there, especially soybeans. Again, we did have that outside reversal day higher on Friday's soybean trade. So we minimized some of the losses for the week, but still some concern there. We kind of talked about that with both Ted and Joe. Some concern in some of these charts. I'm a little more worried. I've mentioned this here in the last couple of programs, a little more worried about this soy complex versus corn and wheat. Still, though, fundamentals aren't great in either of them. Let's look at some of the closes from the day. Friday, May corn up 6 3/4, 4.33 1/2. July corn up 6 3/4 at 4.43. December new crop corn was up 6 1/4, 4.66 1/4. Soybeans, May 16 1/4 higher, 11.50 1/2. July beans up 16 3/4 on Friday's trade, 11.65 3/4. Novi beans, new crop up 11 3/4 at 11.61. May bean meal up 5.70 a ton, 3.43.70. May soybean oil up 26 points, 44.38. May Chicago wheat, 5.50 1/4. That was up 13 1/2. July up 13 3/4 at 5.66 3/4. May Kansas City wheat up 4 1/4, 5.81 1/2. July up 7 3/4 at 5.83. Spring wheat, May 8 1/4 higher, 6.47. July spring wheat up 9 1/2, 6.52 1/2. May oats up 4 3.58 3/4. July oats up 3 3.49. Canola was up slightly on the day. Cotton market's been taking it on the chin as of late. It was up 59 points in the May contract Friday, 78.69. July cotton up 41 points at 81.02. Dairy markets on the day Friday, saw a little bit of green in Class 3 milk futures and a little bit of green in cheese as well. Butter was kind of flat. Livestock trade again on Friday. Good day in hogs. May hogs up 150, 96.22. June hogs up 212, 104.82. July hogs up 212, 106.47. April feeder cattle down 27, 241.32. May feeders down 55 at 242. August feeder cattle down 80, 253.50. April live cattle 30 higher, 181.47. June up 30, 175.67. August live cattle up 2, 173.55. And again, a fairly supportive cattle on feed report out after the close on Friday's trade. What are the geopolitical risks going to look like here heading through the weekend and into this upcoming week? That's going to be a big talking point. It's going to be a big driver in these markets, especially the energy markets, so susceptible to what's going on in the Middle East. So going to be watching that news, seeing what happens, where we go from here. Plenty of uncertainty there. Outside markets will no doubt be influenced by that as well. And that could spill its way over here to the grain and the livestock trade. Just got to remind folks, don't lose sight of what's going on in these markets. Keep a finger on the action. Stay close with us here on Market Talk if you want to. We'll keep you informed, but definitely make sure you have that plan, that marketing plan in the back of your mind, and protect as much of that risk to your downside as you can, because largely, unless something crazy happens, doesn't feel like these markets are going to move much to the upside here in the short term. But I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. A lot of things to think about. All right, we're out of time here on the show today. Thanks again to Ted Seifert with Zahner Ag Hedge and Joe Lardy from CHS joining us here on Market Talk. Coming up on our next program, we'll talk weather with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien and markets with John Heimberg from Total Farm Marketing. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.